You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or a contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 16th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Jimmy Carter's 2016 campaign headquarters, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
You mentioned to me this week that, you know, Jimmy Carter's making the rounds because he has a new book out about defeating the guinea worm.
Yes.
And which he has done. He and his foundation have really worked hard and are dramatically reducing deaths from guinea worm, which is awesome.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. But you pointed out that Jimmy Carter only served one term as president, so he could run again.
He could. Jimmy Carter could absolutely run for president again. He could throw his hat in the ring. He's been the most awesome ex-president ever.
That he's a more awesome ex-president than he was president.
Yeah.
I got to say, being 90, I think that's a bit much. I wouldn't want him to run if I was Rosalynn. Let me put it that way.
90 is the new 70. Honey.
Being president did a real toll. He aged more.
He did.
From 76 to 80 than probably the subsequent years combined. So
but I want to see what a Jimmy Carter at 90 with a completely fuck you attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been good that we did solar, but Ronald Reagan ripped the solar panels. I would like to just see him.
Yeah.
An Onion parody of Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter at a debate. Yeah.
No, this is the Onion parody of Jimmy Carter talking about, oh, cry me fucking river.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Fuck you. It was Jimmy Carter off the hook about, oh, yeah, that would have been good if we would have done that. But remember, I tried to do that and you fuckers wouldn't go along with it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that guy in the White House for 4 years.
Yep.
Just, you know.
And I'm 90, so fuck you.
Yeah. Vetoing everything in sight.
Yep.
And, you know, just, I don't know. How are you going to intimidate me? Push me?
Andy's from Georgia.
Yeah.
No, talk about turning Georgia blue. That would do it. But we are fantasizing here, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
5 years ago, Driftglass.
Yes.
We started a podcast. And you were looking at your archives from 5 years ago earlier today.
I was.
Tell me what was going on 5 years ago. You're going to depress me, aren't you?
You'll be shocked and surprised.
No, I won't.
You'll be shocked and surprised. The world has changed utterly in the last 5 years and almost unrecognizably so. No, it really did just reinforce to me exactly how long of a battle we are engaged in.
Mm-hmm.
That it is easy to get frustrated if you think you have to invent the movement all on your own.
Yeah.
And you're personally responsible for shifting the orbit of the Earth on your own. It is much less stress if you realize that you're an inheritor of a proud tradition.
Well, you know, this reminds me of what Junior Jude said to me at 11 o'clock at night a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I did want to mention this.
Because Junior Jude never has questions at, like, normal hours.
No, over dinner.
No.
But at bedtime, he's got all kinds of hypotheticals he wants to discuss with you.
Well, and we do joke with him. This is the pointing at things and asking questions hour.
What's that?
Yes. Because you don't want to go to bed. So, hey, tell me about that coffee mug and its history. And where did you get that coffee mug? I'm not falling for it, dude. Yeah. But every now and then he cuts loose with a good one.
Yeah. Well, this one was he asked me, Mom, if you could say something to your younger self when you were 20, what would you say?
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, first of all, I would say to you, it's time for bed. Uh-huh. And secondly, I would say to my younger self, go a little easier on yourself and enjoy the moment. And then my eyebrows went up and I went, oh, maybe I should tell 51-year-old Blue Gal that same thing.
Yeah. Solid advice.
It is. And but it occurred to me that that's a good, you know, therapeutic exercise. And I say that knowing that nearly all of the $5 checks we get in our P.O. box have the word therapy or sanity written in the memo line, you know, and I don't want to give people too many trite exercises to engage in to try to make yourself feel better about how bad things are. But it might be good to think about, if you're feeling despair over the current political situation, what would we say to our fellow Americans in 1940 when Paris fell to the Nazis?
And clearly it would be give up now. Learn,
you know, if we'd only negotiate with Hitler a little bit, you know, maybe we'd be okay. Yeah.
Start learning German. No. It's over.
No.
We welcome our new German overlords. We do. That's
clearly... Who needs Europe anyway?
Yeah, fuck that's, them.
You know, that's what they'd be saying on Fox.
Yeah. Well, that's the old Europe. You
know. That's the old Europe, yeah.
I'm old enough to remember the old Europe, and that was the thing. The Republican Party was trying to sell us on the new Europe versus the old Europe, because the old Europe thought going to Iraq was a bad idea.
Yes, right. But
the new
right.
Europe that we just invented in our imagination.
In our head, yes.
A fabulous idea.
No, but seriously, what the civil rights movement has to take the long view.
Yeah, it still does.
And still does. And
it's not over.
It's not over. And did you know that Vermont abolished slavery in 1777? That was the first successful abolitionist movement in America, was in Vermont the year after they signed the Declaration of Independence.
Well, that's, no, I didn't know that.
That stunned me.
Seems
that,
a little show-offy to me. You know, I mean, it's and then consider
the curve in Vermont all the time.
And not to be too.
And now they've got single payer health care in Vermont.
Yeah, we'll see. You
know? So there you go.
I hate to ask, but how many slaves were there in Vermont?
I don't know. But
1777.
They abolished slavery.
12, 13.
They abolished
like
slavery.
I absolutely. And
that's a big deal. And how long did it take after that? You know, 100 years. We don't know how long the war on poverty is going to take. And this
far.
But it's not over yet. No. And the war on stupid is just beginning.
Oh, the war on stupid. Well, we have a long and noble tradition. I mean, every writer I can think of was just appalled by the state of the world and horrified by how dumb people could be and how foolishly they were acting. And why the hell? Charles Dickens made what? Ignorance and Want? His two great eternal enemies in A Christmas Carol.
Yep.
And they're still with us. I mean, it's not like they're
Mark
going
Twain
anywhere.
Built a whole career laughing at stupid people. Yeah, I mean, it goes on. So we've got work to do, but we don't need to have despair. And I think we have to take the long view and take a break when we need to. Let's remember, I'm going to go into my Ted Cruz loves a vacuum shtick.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll get back to 5 years ago. But evil loves a vacuum. And I think Ted Cruz is evil, but Ted Cruz is kind of, in my mind, the personification of all that's wrong with politics these days.
Ted Cruz is like an opportunistic virus.
He is opportunistic, exactly. And midterms elections are a vacuum. Polite Christians are a vacuum. Polite liberals are a vacuum.
Yeah.
And we had Rupert Murdoch this week on Twitter calling for moderate Muslims to take responsibility for terrorism, which made J.K. Rowling and a lot of other people say, look, if I'm personally responsible for everything Rupert Murdoch has done, I don't want to be a Christian or a white person or British anymore or Australian. So the idea that we are one of the reasons I do Bible Bitch is to be a passionate Christian, not a moderate Christian, but to say that Rupert Murdoch doesn't speak for me.
Yeah.
That Mike Huckabee doesn't speak for me. And I'm not going to allow there to be a vacuum in which Mike Huckabee speaks for me because he's the only voice in the room for Christianity. I won't allow that to happen. But we are all responsible. All white people are responsible for Timothy McVeigh. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, and that's the thing. And we should talk about this more now that John Fugelsang has joined the triumvirate of mighty
Bible bitch,
voices.
The Pope and John Fugelsang. That's the new trinity. Yeah.
Sounds like the lead up to a hell of a joke.
They all walk into a bar.
They walk into a bar.
And Blue Gal says, where's my knitting bag?
Yeah. Don't fall for it, Fugelsang. It's a trap. Because there is a vast difference between a passionate person of faith and a fundamentalist person. person. Mm-hmm. Faith. Mm-hmm. This is where fundamentalism, this is why there's so much overlap between conservatives and fundamentalists.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they cannot bear one thread being out of place.
Yeah.
Because if you can tease that one thread out, if you can make them admit one error, then maybe the entire thing is wrong. Yeah. They need everything to be true or nothing is true. And
you were talking about that last week when I mentioned the banner, that Christianity had to be a banner of revolution. Mm-hmm. And you said that makes me nervous because God was on the plane that crashed into the Twin Towers.
Yeah, faith was. Faith.
Faith was. Faith was, yeah. And I've thought about that a lot. And it really is the differential is fundamentalism and an acceptance of the plurality of the world, that we accept that other people might have a difference of opinion than we do, and we might be wrong. What if you're wrong? You're always asking. What if you're wrong to a conservative? What if you're wrong? And liberal Christians ask that all the time of themselves, you know, what if I'm wrong? And if I'm wrong, then I don't want my faith to be pushed as a political agenda on anyone else. That's not the point.
Well, and liberal Christians, speaking for all liberal Christians, all liberals,
everywhere,
that Christians everywhere,
time, space, and dimension. Yeah, yes,
that's my job. knows that everybody is a failed Christian. Everybody's a failed Muslim. Everybody's a failed Jew. Everybody lets their religion down. Everybody does. Sorry, that's just in human nature. We all screw up one way or another. It deeply depends on how you are failing and what you do with your imperfections. If your level of failure is you didn't help out the homeless guy and you feel shitty about it, okay, that's one thing, because you have the capacity to feel shitty about it. And maybe you think that you should have done better. Maybe you think there should be better accommodations for people who are homeless in your city, and you're going to do something about that. Great. If you think that the solution to homelessness is to punish poor people harder, that the real problem with being poor is that it's not miserable enough.
They're not acting like poor people, like Glenn Glossman, who, by the way, has been elected to the House of Representatives. You know, people on food stamps, sometimes they don't act poor. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's real Christian of you. Okay.
We need to immiserate them more.
Yeah.
Then your errors are categorically different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
You're cherry picking your faith to find reasons for your bigotry.
Yeah.
As opposed to confronting your faith and noticing where you let it down, where you fail.
Mm-hmm. And that is the difference. And also, just to get back to this vacuum situation of loving a vacuum.
Uh-huh.
Fundamentalists love theocracy if it's enforcing their personal opinion.
Oh yeah, if they're behind the trigger, man, they're all for it. They're separation of church and state. Fuck that. As long as it's my church, state. Elimination of government from any oversight. If that's fine, as long as I'm in charge of the government, that's fine. There's no reason to worry about those things. The same people, the woman you got into a back and forth with back when George Bush was president. About, great, let's both agree.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, that was Pammy Atlas.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't want Obama knowing what library books she checked out. And
right.
I said, yeah, great, let's repeal the Patriot Act.
Yeah, problem
together.
Solved.
Together. Mm-hmm. We can do it together. No, you know, I don't want to cooperate with you. And I trusted George Bush to know what library books I was taking out, but I don't trust Obama.
Right.
So as long as it's my president who's spying on me, that's fine.
Right, right.
Not understanding that there's a principle involved. Yeah, okay.
So 5 years ago.
Yes, 5 years ago.
5 years ago, I pulled up this thing I used to do called Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I still do that. That's right. I still do that. I've been doing it now for about 10 years. It's my own irreverent. I hate when people talk about themselves that way. It's my own wacky, irreverent take on the Sunday Morning Gas Bag Cavalcade. But that's what it is. Practically since I started writing a blog, I started watching, because that's the place where talking points get rolled out.
Yep.
That's the place where all the clever people, all the smart people, all the DC insider people, it's gossip tabloid TV for the Washington media elite. That's where they get their marching orders from. That's what sets the agenda for the week. So, in January 5th, 2010, my own little, subheading was the most important yet underreported story of the decade. And I was arguing strongly that it was the get a brain morans guy.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago. And I would have made the same argument 5 years before that, probably 5 years from now. 10 years ago, I would have made the same argument, which is there is this thing that's embargoed. I don't know if people know this. They probably do if they listen to the podcast. Or mm-hmm. There's a thing called embargoing, which is where the White House will release the State of the Union address an hour before the president actually gives it. But it's embargoed. It's held in a special place. And you don't comment on it, you don't publish it or print it. You could read it and get your thoughts together on it, but it's embargoed.
You're not allowed to use it anywhere in public journalism. Right. It is, you get a copy, an advanced copy, a few minutes or a few hours ahead of time, so you can write a story about it. But yeah, you're forbidden, literally forbidden from publishing it. So
there are topics in this country that are embargoed forever.
Yes, there are.
That you are never, ever allowed to talk about. And that's if you true. Try to talk about them, you just get your legs cut out from under you and they whisk you off the stage and you're never heard from again. Mm-hmm. And the number one topic 5 years ago for me was the fact the Republican Party had lost its fucking mind, that it was being run by bigots and lunatics who are now pretending they never heard of George Bush. These are people who had just spent all of 2004 or the end of 2004 and 2005 dancing in their finest tap shoes on my skull and reminding me that George Bush won with 60 million votes. George Bush is the most popular president in history. Blah, blah, blah. We won. You lost. Fuck you. Okay. Those people by 2010 had all burned all their Dick Cheney, George Bush lawn signs and had all gotten their tri-corner hats and their Gadsden flags and were pretending they'd never heard of George Bush. Now, that is mathematically impossible. Okay. There's no – everyone on the left knew what the Tea Party was. It was a bald-faced, well-funded rebranding effort to get the people off the hook for the 8 years of travesty and tears they had left behind in their wake. And it never would have worked. They would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for you meddling liberals. Actually, they did get away with it because meddling liberals are not allowed on television. So when you're interviewing a Tea Party hack, you're not allowed to ask them – by the way, weren't you very active in your local anti-tax movement? Weren't you a very big George Bush supporter? No, I never had anything to do with politics before in my life. So 2010 was the year that the Republican Party was deeply involved in rebranding itself, mm-hmm. and we weren't allowed as a country mm-hmm. to openly talk about the fact that one of our two major political parties was fucking insane. And what was more creepy about it was how completely complicit the media was in this. Mind you, this is just on the heels of the Iraq War turning out to be every bit the horror show liberals told you it would be. This is just on the just after the Great Recession hit bottom. This is the moment in history where people should be going, you know what? Republicans should be barred from holding public office for the next 30 fucking years. There have been nothing but a disaster for this country for as long as anybody can remember. But we didn't have that moment. And so we just pretended it never happened. Oh, no, that never happened. So 5 years ago, Fox News host Glenn Beck, according to David Milbank, was admired more than the Pope.
Wow.
Which is deeply different.
Well, that's the red-shoed gay Pope, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's okay. Not the Pope. That was the liberal Pope from Italy. Or from South America. I apologize.
From South America. Yes.
And then there was this wonderful book being published. Here's the title. Right Now, a 12-step program for defeating the Obama agenda.
Oh, wow. That sounds like Michelle Malkin.
Yeah.
She wrote a book about the lack of transparency in the Obama administration. And it came out like 3 weeks after the inauguration. So she had clearly signed a deal for this book and written it ahead of the administration taking office.
Right.
Which means she knew Romney was going to lose, or she knew McCain was going to lose.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knew McCain was going to lose.
So, you know, everybody at Regnery, I assume this is Regnery Press. Is it a Regnery Press book?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes.
It's not written by Michelle Malkin because she had a different book out.
It was not. But let me give you a few tidbits from this book.
Okay, because I want to guess the author of this one because I do not know.
The problem with post-Reagan Republicans is that they compromised, Blue Gal.
That's straight out of Newt Gingrich's playbook.
It is.
He didn't write it, or I didn't know about it.
But this was how we must support Republican officials who assert these principles, says the author. And these principles are basically everyone's now glomming onto the teabaggers.
Right, right.
They're the real Republicans. No, they're the same Republicans. They're nothing. Mm-hmm. They haven't changed one iota. They've just changed their headgear. That's mm-hmm. all. That's the only thing that's changed. But we have to attach ourselves to the real Republican. And who are the real Republicans? Well, the author defends former Vice President Dick Cheney's harsh criticism of Barack Obama, saying that he too believes Obama tried to avoid directly acknowledging a war on terror. Yeah, Barack Obama doesn't acknowledge that there's a war on terrorism. Won't do it. It's a real shame. He focuses the book on denouncing Barack Obama's roadmap to failure. That's just his overall description of Obama's policies. The stimulus package was a reckless, wasteful, pork-laden spending spree, and liberal views on man-made climate warming were a threat to life on Earth. Depends on whom you ask.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did Sean Hannity write this?
No. Well, he probably did. But, but no, this was the – drum roll, please. This guy now has a job at MSNBC.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. This is the same guy who was on, as I recall – this week with George Stephanopoulos, saying that government jobs aren't real jobs.
Wow.
No. You see, the only real jobs are free market jobs. All the government jobs aren't real jobs because they're jobs.
Michael Steele?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
This was right after the Republican freakout that a black guy was in the White House. Yeah. We've got to get ourselves a black. So they went out and hired Michael Steele to be the RNC chair. And they filled his pockets with cash and told him what to say, and he toddled out on the stage and said all the right things. There's no such thing as man-made climate change. Barack Obama is a horrible traitor. America's just the problem with his country is we're not conservative enough. And after a couple of years of people laughing their ass off at that show, Michael Steele then transitioned into his new job as an MSNBC analyst.
Yeah, and no one pulls this book out and reads it to him on the air.
No, because we don't do that, do we? Like Chuck Todd said, thank God for Chuck Todd. As Chuck Todd said, we don't ask harsh questions because then you might not come on my show no more. And so I don't want to make him mad. So that's the reason why there's no slap fight between like Chris Matthews and Michael Steele over any of this stuff, because if you start bringing up shit that Michael Steele said 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we might dip into a Chris Matthews past. And, you know, remember remember how Phil Donahue used to work here until you stabbed him in the back? Remember that? Yeah. So we don't – this is the pervasive problem with the media. Yeah. It's because everyone is so fucking complicit, because almost everyone inside of it has sold out, has something to hide. Everyone protects everyone else's secrets. It is amazing that this institution devoted to transparency and openness, according to the Constitution, is the most secretive, insular, deeply controlled, fucked up organization in America.
It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy not just for the whole country, which is bad enough, but it's small in a smaller way. It's a tragedy for the Republican Party because...
Oh,
every congressman watches Fox all day long in their office. Their whole staff watches Fox all day long in their office, and they believe this shit. And so we're going to have more mistakes like the one Mitt Romney made in the debate, where he insists that it must be true that whatever Fox talking point there is, and then reality has to burst in and say, no, that was not true. And then you get Barack Obama saying, please proceed, governor, you know.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a lot of that if it's people like Bobby Jindal and Marco Rubio on the stage who are just going to repeat a Fox News talking point as if it's true and get checked on it in a debate.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about Will Wheaton, if you don't mind.
Let me just finish off this little list here. It's very quick. 5 years ago, Politico cuddles with Dick Cheney.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Was the Huffington Post headline. Dick Cheney is an unemployed man with a lot of dyspeptic grievances to bleed out into the world. But for whatever reason, he lacks the means to type out his malingerings himself. So it's a lucky thing that John Harris and Jim Vanderhei agreed to be Politico, Republico, Tiger Beat on the Potomac, as Charlie Pierce calls it. have agreed to be the webmasters to his live journal, which the people call Politico. Yes. It's just pathetic. And then over the weekend, according to rereading my notes from 5 years ago, people were just reading aloud from Dick Cheney's press releases or showing tape of him. He didn't even have to go on people's shows.
Yeah.
He could just dispatch his thoughts like Chairman Mao to the media, and on Meet the Press, David Gregory repeating Dick Cheney's what Cheney's been saying. And let me put his comments up on the screen, because, you know, Dick Cheney should be in leg irons.
Yeah.
He should be in The Hague. But instead, he's being put up. Now, mind you, he's not on these shows, but his words are being displayed on the screen as credible and thoughtful by David Gregory, Jim Moran this week, Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation, and Chris Wallace on Fox News. He did the full, and without ever having to leave his lair, Dick Cheney got to be on every television program in the country in 2010. So I guess my point is, nothing changes, really.
Yep.
Within their bubble, nothing changes. Barack Obama is still a monster. Climate change is still just the befuddled work of climate scientists who are trying to run the biggest scam in human history. Dick Cheney is still a hero. And
it's like Frank Zappa said. It's like Frank Zappa said, the news media is the entertainment division of the military-industrial complex.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what they're there to do, is support, you know, the military lobbyists and what they want. So there you go.
Now, I believe Mr. Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton. Well, this dovetails into this, because Will Wheaton discovered, by making a comment on Twitter, he made a comment about how sad it is that I'm sorry. Now I'm just getting burnt out. Let me just stop a minute. Take a breath.
Doing fine.
Yeah. He made a comment on Twitter about how sad it is that Ted Cruz was in charge of the committee that oversees NASA. And it is predictable how quickly conservative Twitter swooped down on that comment, because it was mentioned at Twitchy.
Uh-huh.
And so Michelle Malkin, or whoever's writing for Michelle Malkin these days, calls her flying monkeys to go down to Twitter and attack Will Wheaton with two thematic comments that were remarkably consistent.
Uh-huh.
One is, shut up, Wesley.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Will Wheaton said it's a particularly great burn when it's based on a 30-year-old TV show. And this other thing that he thought was really weird, and I do too, that Barack Obama had turned NASA into a Department for Muslim Outreach.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was mentioned over and over again as a consistent talking point by conservative Twitter. Along with the consistency of linking back to Michelle Malkin and letting Dana Lash know that you sent this tweet as well.
Dana,
it's important.
Dana, did she notice me? Is she looking at me?
Yeah, it's a double hard on over there, because you get both. And how sad that is. And it's all guys, and you know how old they are, and you know how many dates they haven't had.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their life, is doing what Michelle Malkin tells them to do. Mm-hmm. And I do highly recommend going to willwheaton.com. Is it .org or .com? Now I got to look that up. I think it's willwheaton.com.
I think it's UFP, United Federation of Planets.
But... no, it's...
Which should be a domain.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's...
You read aloud.
Willwheaton.net. Excuse me.
Uh-huh. See? He's on the cutting edge. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Willwheaton.net. Go to his blog at willwheaton.net and read the story that time the stupid sphere showed up. It's a long read, but it's a good read, and we recommend it.
Well, and here's the thing, I mean this in the very best possible way, it's completely predictable.
That's what I meant, was you could time it, you could set a watch as to when this would happen and what they would say. And so Will Wheaton investigated, where did this weird story come up about,
right,
you know, Muslim outreach with NASA? He had never heard of this before. And it's weird that so many people would say it. And he said, well, it has to be, you know, Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, right? And ta-da, it's Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh made a point that because someone at NASA said that we should help the Arab world know that we appreciate all that their culture has contributed to math and science. Someone at NASA made that point that, you know, that we owe so much to the Muslim world because their culture contributed to math and science. Rush Limbaugh said, can you do Rush Limbaugh? Because I don't do it like
I do. Well, I don't have to go to the I've taken a crap in the last few days. You just have to think of yourself as someone who hasn't taken a dump in about a year.
Okay.
And you're very, very angry about what that black man probably said about you across the hall.
Right.
I'm so, very angry about what he did.
Well. And Rush Limbaugh took that to mean, so Barack Obama is making NASA into a Muslim outreach organization. That because some guy at NASA... who probably didn't get instructions from Barack Obama as to what to say. Oh, yes. No. Of course he did.
Of course. Well, but here's the thing.
But here's the thing. It's 50 people on Twitter
right.
quoting that as if it's gospel. You have to, of course, you know, the sky is blue and Barack Obama has transformed NASA into Muslim outreach.
But you find these things, these weird little catchphrases.
Yeah.
That they have, you know, Saul Alinsky. He's a Saul Alinsky Democrat. You've never read Saul Alinsky. You don't know who the fuck he is. You've been trained like a dog to say that over and over again.
Yep.
Bill Ayers. You know Bill Ayers. Reverend Wright, Jeremiah Wright. And there's a whole string of these just, and you find these seeded, you know, like corn in an outhouse, shall we say. seeded throughout, and they repeat this gibberish as if it made sense, as if they're scoring points with some audience out there. And there actually is...
It's Michelle Malkin. They're scoring points with Michelle Malkin.
Well, here's the, if I may quote George Orwell. Mm-hmm. Duck speak.
Yeah.
Duck speak is a new speak term meaning literally to quack like a duck or to speak without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Duck speak can either be good or ungood, depending on who is speaking and whether what they're saying is... In following with the ideals of Big Brother, to speak rubbish and lies may be ungood, but to speak rubbish and lies for the good of the party may be good. And that's all they're doing. They're just mindlessly repeating, like children, or like some animal life, what they've been taught to say. They're just parroting these weird little phrases, and it drives rational people crazy because the words coming out of their mouth sound like English. They sound like they make sense, but you dig under the hood, you find out, oh, there's nobody home. It's just this mindless meat engine, this little reflex machine that's just catching phrases from Michelle Malkin and pitching them back out, catching bullshit from Rush Limbaugh, pitching it back out, voting when they're told to, believing what they're told to, getting angry about what they're told to, and forgetting the past whenever the past becomes inconvenient. They have literally become a caricature of Orwell. This entire political party is now just something that Orwell recognized as the party.
Yeah, yeah.
In every way, from top to bottom, and deliberately so, on purpose and deliberately so. And the fact that we're not allowed to talk about that is the truly creepy part, because I can understand how cults happen, how they come and they go, but we usually report on Heaven's Gate or Jim Jones as a cult. We don't just say, well, you know, Heaven's Gate said one thing before they committed suicide, but, you know, the Republicans said one other thing, and who really knows who's right or who's wrong? No, one group's a cult that's crazy, that believes crazy, irrational things. One group you might disagree with or agree with or think they're pussies or whatever, but they're not insane. But we're not allowed to say that on television because Chuck Todd doesn't want to have people make a pouty face at him and walk off his show.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Anyway, it's well worth reading. WillWheaton.net, the time the stupid sphere showed up. And he makes the point that he can discuss food, have a picnic, enjoy a beer, talk about your kids with these people at any time. But he has to block them on Twitter because you can't have a debate anymore. And this is what's hurting the Republican Party and hurting the country, because we do better as a nation with a legitimate two-party system where there is actual debate and we get to what the best ideas are.
Yeah.
But if you're just dealing with one sane party and one insane party, We don't get the best ideas. We have, and if liberals are constantly battling with people who think that Barack Obama has turned NASA into a Muslim outreach organization, mm-hmm. that just turns America into mush.
Yeah. Yep. Which is
it
the plan.
It really does. Which is the plan, because then the corporatocracy can take over. Yeah. Yeah. And Will Wheaton does say, you know, this is really sad. It's really sad that there is a group of Americans who spend all of their time trying to impress Michelle Malkin.
Yeah.
By lying for her.
Yep.
And yeah, it's a tragedy. All right. We need to talk about the hog castrator, whose name I can never say right.
Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst.
Senator. Now I really can't say it. Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa.
Who's Charlie Pierce's new best friend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's your opinion.
No. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He asked her a straight up math question.
Yeah. Are there zero people with Ebola in America now? Well, that's your opinion.
And she smiled and moved on.
Yeah.
It reminded me, just the way he wrote it, reminded me of Martin Sheen in The Dead Zone.
Uh-huh.
You know, that highly polished candidate who suddenly, you know, just you see the crazy inside of that person.
Yeah.
And there's just that moment where they snap on just before the smile comes on. You can just see the crazy right behind the mask.
Uh-huh.
And Joni Ernst believes a staggering amount of completely insane bullshit, which she's talked about before. And she has been tapped to give the Republican Party's response, because it wouldn't be the State of the Union without a response, now would it?
No.
To the State of the Union address. And I'm looking forward to it because I think she will do an excellent job.
I'm looking forward to this whole campaign. I am. I mean, when you look at the slate of candidates that the GOP has to choose from, it could turn into a real tragedy if the media just totally decides that it's Jeb Bush's turn.
I think they've pretty much bent in that direction now. Jeb is the one to beat.
Yeah, Jeb is the one to beat. And we know that because David Brooks is fluffing for him.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sad. And you missed it because you were in a coma from being sick, and I'm glad you're feeling better. But Lawrence O'Donnell had on Joanne Reed last night, and we're recording this Friday afternoon. There was not a single Republican candidate that she wasn't smiling and happy about to cover, you know. So,
oh, sure, let's do that.
Sure, let's talk about Chris Christie some more. That'll be great, you know. So it's gonna be entertaining, I gotta say. We'll have plenty to podcast about for the next couple years, I can tell you that. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. I'm sorry, are we missing something else?
I was going to mention that David Brooks is the most environmentally conscious.
Why is that? Go ahead. So David Brooks is fluffing, you know, for Jeb.
Yeah.
And we can't really do a 5-year anniversary podcast without talking about David Brooks for just a second.
Just a second. And I didn't want to go through my archives to find the best post, but because there's so many choice little nuggets out there.
He's never going to retire. You know that, right?
No, he has the best job in America. Are you kidding me? He has the best job in the world. He literally showed off exactly how much moisture you can wring out of one dry bullshit concept.
Hmm.
He wrote a column for the New York Times last week on the tragedy in France, the mass killing at the headquarters of the Charlie Hebdo newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Except it wasn't about that at all. He devoted half a paragraph to saying, yes, it was terrible what happened there. But let's talk about campus speech codes, shall we? And then he's off at a gallop to talk about how hypocritical we are in this country because, you know, if Charlie Hebdo had been published on a college campus, why they wouldn't have been allowed to be published on a college campus. And I really went through there with a fairly large tooth comb.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for the stupid first of all, why the fuck would you, what would prompt you to go from A to B? What in the world, why would that be the thing you would think of? Secondly, yeah, there are some campuses that restrict speech. And the reason I know about them is the people that got restricted went across the street to the newspaper and told their story there, which you can do in this country. By the way, Charlie Hebdo was not a campus newspaper.
Yeah.
It was a private enterprise, private undertaking, which we have in this country. We call them South Park, and we call them The Onion, and we call them Comedy Central, and we call them Tosh.0. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a ton of offensive shit on television, on the radio, in print, being run off the presses every week, doing a fairly good business, but they're not being run out of the basement of Delta House because they're not college news. So just the equivalent is like, no, this was a private enterprise, which, by the way, the French government did outlaw a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea what the point he's trying to make other than David Brooks can't cope with real reality.
Well, I know he can't cope with the fact that they were shot up for what they said.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to talk about that. He's a douchebag.
He has a thing he wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is the fact that there's the adults table in our media and the children's table. Mm-hmm. And he, David Brooks, and Meet the Press, which he said explicitly, are the adult table.
Yep.
And the children's table shouldn't be outlawed, of course. There shouldn't be rules against it, but you shouldn't pay them too much attention. Well, sorry, David Brooks, but like you, Ann Coulter has a national column. Like you, Ann Coulter gets to go on television whenever she wants to. Like you, Ann Coulter gets to have her book published whenever she wants to. Like you, she gets quoted everywhere. So I don't see.
They have a chair for her on Fox anytime she wants to go on Hannity. Yep.
There's no difference in terms of the reach you have. But his distinction between the sober, thoughtful, intelligent adult table. It depends entirely on not reading anything David Brooks wrote when George Bush was in office.
Which
was not nice, and it was not sober, and it was not thoughtful. It was vicious, and it was provocative, and it was lies.
Yeah.
And so his career really depends on people not bringing up the fact that he used to be the sort of writer that he now pretends is awful. But what was most hilarious and disturbing was the fact that he didn't just write this column for the New York Times, that he then went over to the offices of the National Public Radio Service and commented on his own column. And then he went over to PBS and commented on his own column. And then he was on Meet the Press, where he was asked about this thing in France, and he said, "Well, yes, it's terrible, but what about the speech codes?" On four different occasions, David Brooks was given a chance to talk about Charlie Hebdo. He said, "Yeah, it's very bad, but what about campus speech codes?" So E.J. Dionne, to his credit, who is basically his radio Mark Shields, is liberal punching bag sidekick, said, "I'm sure my close, dear, personal friend David Brooks doesn't mean it this way, but it sure sounds like he's drawing a false equivalence between this thing and that thing."
Between Charlie Hebdo and college newspapers,
And David Brooks got right up on his high horse, said, "Well, wait a minute. That's just ridiculous. Nobody in their right minds. I went over this with my assistant very carefully, and we both agreed that nobody could possibly think I was drawing some sort of false equivalence between the two, despite the fact that every fucking time anybody's asked me about Charlie Hebdo, my first response was, 'Yeah, but what about college speech codes?'" That's exactly what you're doing. That is all you do. Your entire fucking job in the media, David Brooks, is to draw false equivalences between real tragedies
and the shit
and hippies and the things you want to talk about. Oh, what about the liberal college speech goes? Huh? What about that? So it was amazing to see anyone ever push back against David Brooks, because that just doesn't happen. That's against
He had prepared with his assistant
a complete, a thorough rebuttal.
Right, which is my assistant and I rebuke that.
Both me and my Filipino houseboy both agree wholeheartedly. It's like Tom Friedman's, cab driver.
Right.
Fictional cab driver.
Right.
No, me and my assistant both agree that this is just silly. Nobody could ever believe that I'm drawing a false equivalence, even though every single time I was asked about one thing, I equated it to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But David Brooks, 5 years ago, was pumping out bullshit in the media and being lauded for it as a wise and sage man. He, this last week, was in Birmingham, Alabama, giving a speech at a church about moral leadership. 5 years from now, he'll be doing the same thing. And 5 years after that, he'll be doing the same thing. He is an unstoppable and unmovable force of nature. I accept that. My job is to shoot spitballs at him. And that's what I do. So if I ever get a column at Esquire, Charlie Pierce, or The Nation, Katrina Vandenhoevel, or Rolling Stone, Matt Taibbi, or any place else in the world, I will throw larger spitballs with greater velocity. But what I have now is my podcast with my lovely and talented wife and my blog, which is going to come up on its 10-year anniversary. And I'm just
March. Yeah.
And the job of the outsider is to point these uncomfortable facts up from the position of the children's table. And every now and then, a spitball lands in someone's duck a l'orange and they go, you! And we all high-five each other.
And you all high-five each other because it happened. Yes. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. However, this week's internet kitties for our 5th anniversary are our own kitties, Zeppo and Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper. Zeppo is about 13 years old, and Barack is 2.5. But the other day, I caught them on camera sleeping 1 foot away from each other, which never happens. So I'm very grateful that they thought it was cold enough in the bedroom. They all wanted to snuggle on the warm blanket and got a picture of them, of both of them sleeping. So I'm glad we did that for our 5th anniversary. Happy week, Zeppo and Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. We aren't always able to respond to every show idea that you send in, but please know that we love hearing from you, and we read everything and do appreciate your suggestions and input. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are those internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties wrote a song and they want me to sing it. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely, that's fine.
This is straight from the internet kitties. Bobby Jindal went to London, though he was a phony. Get some foreign policy cred by visiting the throny. Bobby Jindal, keep it up, but whatever you do, don't claim the Queen's English is spoke in Baton Rouge. Bobby Jindal went to London, popped his foreign cherry, wouldn't go to Germany because Angela Merkel's scary. Bobby Jindal, keep it up, travel where you please. It's not like Hillary Clinton has spent time overseas.
Bravo, bravo. Those internet kitties are so clever.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University comes to us from Lawrence in Phoenix.
Oh, Lawrence.
Thank you, Lawrence. This is pretty funny. Crooks and Laurie. Sorry. He points out that Crooks and Liars had a story that really is straight out of Dune. The Boehner poison plot. Did you hear about this?
I did. And happy anniversary, Blue Gal.
Oh, happy 5th anniversary to you too, Driftglass. 5 years of podcasting. We're very excited.
Podcasting excellence. 5 years.
5 years. 5 years. Mm-hmm. And we're very grateful that the poison plot against John Boehner was not successful. But it does remind Lawrence and a lot of us of Dune. Mm-hmm. And so Lawrence in Phoenix has put together a few science fiction related Dune questions about poisoning for you.
Oh, Lord. Well, it played a big part in Dune. Dune
really did.
Yeah. Interfamilial assassination was a very big part of the legacy of Dune. And yep.
So there you go.
All right.
So these are questions about poison in Dune.
Okay.
Poison was commonly used in house-to-house warfare and intrigue in Dune.
Yes.
There were two forms. One is poison in the drink, and the other is poison in the food. What are they called in the novel?
Oh, see.
The novel's Dune.
I was going to say they're called poison in the drink and poison in the food.
No, there's a name for them. There's a special word for them in Dune.
Yes, and that points out how specialized the poisoning had gotten by this time.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't remember.
The poison in the drink is Chamurky. M-U-R-K-Y, which is what the plot against Speaker Boehner involved, poison wine.
Yep.
The other is poison in the food is Chamus.
Yep. Sounds familiar. It's all coming back to me now.
What was the common countermeasure against poison in Imperial society?
They had machines. They had snoopers.
That's right. Poison snoopers, devices that check the food and drink of royals. Human tasters were not used. All right. What was special about a Reverend Mother in terms of poison?
Well, the water of life was poison.
It was?
Yeah, that's the goop that came out of a living worm, a baby worm, and she would transform it, and it would kill anybody else, I think.
Okay.
So I know.
Go ahead.
I know she can do that, but beyond that, I'm a little misty.
A Reverend Mother could control her own body chemistry to negate the poison, so she could not be poisoned in any way.
I'm gonna give myself half credit for that.
What drug from the Dune universe might Speaker Boehner have already ingested, and what side effect makes this obvious?
Man, I want to say spice, but that would be silly and redundant. And his eyes are not blue within blue, so that can't be true. I don't know.
It is the Alaka drug, which turns a victim's skin orange.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Or how a perfect. Person taking this drug orange. Yeah.
That is perfect. That really is. I would have gone with steroids from the 80s, maybe, but yeah.
And at this point, Lawrence in Phoenix wants us to know that he is referencing Dune, the 40th anniversary edition, pages 322 and 324 in the ebook, as he can't find his 25th anniversary edition hardback just now.
Yeah. Okay, Lawrence. a little word of advice for anyone who's submitting questions like this. I greatly appreciate it. From now on, you don't need to footnote your...
He trusts you.
I totally trust you. I would wager you don't have an autographed copy of The Children of Dune like I do, but that's okay. You do what you can with what you have, I suppose.
You guys are me and knitting bags. You really?
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's
my knitting other bags. Knitting bag.
Yeah. Nope. Not going to fall for that again. Nope. There are 28 other knitting bags.
Yes,
in our house,
that's so. Right. Yes. All right. Who was commonly given the Alaka drug in the novel and to what effect?
I remember the Mentiats took drugs that made their brains more Mentiati, and had some effect on their lips, but I don't remember anything else besides that.
They were given to slave gladiators who fought in the Harkonnen arenas. The drug reduced the slave's instinct for self-preservation while also instilling crippling terror at the certainty of his impending death.
So Boehner is clearly chugged like a gallon of this stuff.
That's the next question. How much Alaka drug has Speaker Boehner ingested?
Jesus, all of it. He drank it dry. Because that, let's see, no instinct for, well, a heedless of self-preservation and he gets all freaked out at, oh, yeah, that's Boehner.
That's Boehner.
That's brilliant. Lawrence, that is brilliant.
Lawrence says, clearly the weepy orange bastard has drunk deeply and is in the end stages of the paranoid psychosis of the Alaka drug. And he adds, well, this is not a very serious submission for Science Fiction University. A lot of wind up for the Orange Julius punchline.
Yeah.
Driftglass will, I hope, be mildly amused. Yeah, I think we are all more than mildly amused.
Very good. Of all the different angles on this story, Lawrence, I believe only you have come up with the science fiction one.
Yeah. And that really is true. It does appear to me that Boehner's ingested a lot.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Lawrence, and thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure.
Here's to the next 5 years with Science Fiction University. By the way, we didn't do it at the beginning. We tinker with this podcast and make it into different things, and this is something that has worked for us. I'm glad we're doing this.
5 years from now, it's just going to be Bible Bitch.
The Bible Bitch show. No, I don't think so.
An hour of reading from the King James Bible.
Oh, Lord.
And then a pop quiz at the end.
There'll be a quiz at the end, people. All right. I don't think so. All right. Thank you, Driftglass.
You bet, Blue Gal. Love you.
Love you, too. Bye.